All right, so let's talk about the battle royale. Let's talk about the death match. Let's talk about thumbtacks. Let's talk about blood. Let's talk about just everything. Okay. Now, this is South Carolina. Okay, guys, there is a vote coming up Saturday. Now, you have to understand something. We have six candidates left. There really should only be three candidates left. There really should be. There really should only be three people left. But because Donald Trump is winning, because he won New Hampshire, because he almost won Iowa, because he's leading in Florida and Nevada and, Pennsylvania. I mean, you name the state, Trump is leading it. Because this is going on, the goalpost keeps moving. That's what they're doing. They're moving the goalpost. Okay? Past elections, whoever won New Hampshire was basically anointed the nominee. And if they won New Hampshire as big as Trump did, not that everybody gets out, but normally only three people move on from New Hampshire to South Carolina. If you want to get technical, normally only three people move on. But in this case, six people moved on. And I mean, we're talking about people that, again, in any other presidential primary race would never have moved. Jeb Bush would never have moved on to South Carolina. He would never have moved on to South Carolina. In any other primary race, say Mitt Romney. Mitt Romney was Donald Trump. And Mitt Romney won New Hampshire by 20 points, followed by John Kasich at 16, followed by Ted Cruz. Those three people would have moved on. But the whole Rubio and Bush, no, wouldn't have happened. It wouldn't have happened. People would have said, Jeb, you have 10%. You have 10%. The winner had 36%. In Iowa, you had something like 5%, 6%. And you're down in the polls in South Carolina by 30 points. Forget about it. It's over. And he would have said, you're right, and he would have got out. But somehow they spun his fourth place finish into a win. I don't know how that is. Oh, I do know how it is. Relax. I do know how it is because Trump is the one who won. So now we have a primary. We have a election Saturday, which is actually pretty huge considering that weekends to hold a vote, you're going to get the biggest turnout. The hugest turnout, a day where people can actually either take off or not work at all. Tuesday, I gotta go to work. As soon as I get off from work, I gotta rush over to Bobby Jones's garage, and then I'm tired, and you know, I see the polls, so those up by 20 points, they don't really need my vote, or so-and-so's down by 20 points, my vote's not going to matter. At least Saturday, you can actually get up if you're not working, have a full day to do the voting thing and make it a little event. So Saturday, the turnout's going to be huge. So Saturday you have the South Carolina primary. Now, right now, Trump is up by 20-some-odd points. New poll came out, I think it was yesterday, that shows Trump up and up big. Like, he actually gained 3 or 4 points. Now, of course, you hear people saying, well, that's before the debate, and who knows what's going to happen because of the debate. Who knows what's going to happen? Because, you know, of course, Trump lost. You heard the crowd, right? The crowd even did. Okay. So, in theory, those polls can change. But, like New Hampshire showed, in a real voting state, not a caucus bully state, people that support Trump supported him months ago, and they never left. They made their minds up. They sat there and went, 2, 3, 4 months ago, I'm voting for Donald Trump. And even if he killed somebody in the middle of downtown Manhattan, I would still vote for him. So anyways, he's up. Are the people going to leave him? Who knows? But the new polls show that he's up 3 or 4 more points. Okay? He's up 3 or 4 more points. Now, between now and Saturday, every single one of those people could leave. Sure. But as of right now, they're not. As of right now, they're not. So, we now have this debate. And it's the last stand. Who was it? What was that Western? What was that? The last stand? Were they the Alamo? Was it the Alamo? The last stand of Wounded Knee? This is it. This is it. They moved the goalposts so much that you're going to now have 6 candidates for a debate for an election on Saturday. And it's funny listening to people try to play this, well, we have all of these candidates because Trump isn't strong enough to get more than the 35, 36, 37, at times 40% of the electorate. So that's, again, they move the goalpost. They move the goalpost because, again, Mitt Romney, who had 2% more of the vote, but had 3,000 less votes in 2012. I actually heard Limbaugh, which, again, people go, oh, he likes Trump. He's a shill for Rubio. He just disguises it better than Levin's shilling for Cruz. But Limbaugh even said the day after the New Hampshire primaries, well, you know, Trump didn't win more of a percentage of the vote than Romney did. So it's not some revolution. It's not some movement. But he was neglecting to say, well, because of higher turnout, which Trump brought in, he did receive more votes. The whole percentage game is a little dishonest. Should be playing the votes. And Trump got more votes. End of story. So the field is only the way it is because the establishment, the Republican hierarchy, will not let the field whittle down. It has nothing to do with Trump as far as not being able to get votes. Trump is getting the same votes that 2012 and 2008. Seriously, he's doing everything that 08 McCain, 2012 Romney. New Hampshire, you had a total of 8 candidates vying for the vote. In 2016, you had 8 candidates. The same thing. Romney in New Hampshire, it wasn't him and 2 other people. It was a total of 8, just like now. But right after New Hampshire, basically everyone got out. Same thing in 08. Same percentage. Matter of fact, you could even throw you could throw props to Cruz. Cruz had a bigger percentage, along with Trump, than Huckabee and Santorum from Iowa. So again, what's going on in 2016, as far as voter turnout, as far as people with percentages and winning primary or caucus, is more than 08 and 12. But this time around, the goalpost has moved. Nobody's playing by the rules of 08 and 12. So when you hear people go, oh, well, this is happening with the crowded field because Trump can't get. No, it has nothing to do with Trump can't get. It's the hierarchy. It's the establishment. It's the Republican power brokers preventing the field to whittle down. They're saying to Bush, they're saying to Kasich, they're saying to Rubio, they're saying to all of them, stay in the race, stay in the race. We're going to get Trump. We're going to get Trump. We promise you, we're going to get Trump. So they set it up for Saturday. They set it up for this debate. The goal was attack Trump. Attack Trump. That was the goal. Attack Trump. We will stack the audience. We will stack the audience so that no matter what happens, the person at home, it's a boxing trick. Haven't you seen, if you're a boxing fan, it happens in boxing a lot. You have the hometown favorite. Doesn't necessarily have to be in their hometown, but you have the favorite. And every time the favorite lands a punch, even if it's a glancing blow, even if it's not connecting at all, and the other guy is dodging and weaving, the crowd explodes. Yeah! So whoever's watching, it's like, oh, man, whoa. Wow, did you see that? Even though nothing happened. Nothing happened whatsoever. And you'll even have announcers. You'll even have announcers. Whether it's Max Kellerman or Larry Merchant. They'll even make reference to the fact that the home crowd is trying to influence. I mean, they're not collectively doing it. They didn't all get into the arena and say, hey, everybody, this is what we're going to do. That's not what they mean. But the cheering, the celebration over small things is them influencing the judges, because the judges are going, wow, this is okay. Yeah, I guess that was big. Instead of judging on effectiveness, instead of doing what they're supposed to do, they're letting emotion overtake the moment. Happens in a debate, the 10, 12, 15, 20 million people at home, they're sitting there watching the debate. They watch Donald Trump say something. They watch Jeb Bush say something. They watch Donald Trump say something, the crowd boos. And then it goes to Jeb Bush and the crowd starts cheering and wow, yeah. Well, the people at home are going, oh, okay. Look at that. Hey, okay, I guess Jeb is a winner. And it happened to a lesser extent, Ted Cruz. When Ted Cruz challenged the moderator, when they were discussing appointments to the Supreme Court, and the moderator, I think, again, it's that Pele. I think that's his name. If I'm wrong, I'm sorry. Don't crucify me. Don't Jesus me. But they kind of had a little back and forth about the year of an appointment by Reagan. And the crowd started to boo. The crowd started to boo Cruz. Sit there and say, what the hell's going on? But the Republican establishment, that despises Donald Trump and Ted Cruz, but Donald Trump more. When you hear people go, well, they don't like Ted Cruz. No, they despise Trump. They despise Trump because Trump officially, they finally sat there and watched this debate. And these are things he's always said, but they've officially come to the conclusion that Trump is not the traditional conservative. He is not your traditional evangelical Christian conservative. And the people that support him are not your traditional evangelical conservatives. And it's freaking the establishment out. Because what they thought they knew is not what's going on. What they thought for the last 30 years. Because remember, Republicans haven't won a real election since Ronald Reagan. Republicans haven't won a real election, a transformation election since Ronald Reagan. And if you really think about Ronald Reagan, you had a Democrat, you had a Jimmy Carter, you had probably one of the worst presidents in our history. Worse than Richard Nixon. And Nixon got impeached. So even that, you say to yourself, okay, what's real? Because remember, since the 80s, Republicans have had this illusion, I guess, that they won because evangelicals came out and voted. And since then, every single evangelical has stayed home and have not participated because the nominee haven't been evangelical enough. Or conservative evangelical at all, which is kind of funny considering you're talking about 30 something years ago, and there's probably a huge portion of the people that voted for Reagan and were part of the Reagan movement that are dead. I mean, seriously, they're dead, or they're near dead. There's far more young people. I'm not talking about millennials, but there's far more people in their 30s and 40s that are voting than the people that were part of the Reagan Revolution. That's just the way it is. It's just the way it is. So what Republicans, I mean, just look at the people that are pundits and just gauge their age. Rather, it's George Will or Crystal or people from the Weekly Standard, whatever the hell that rag was, National Review. Hell, look at Scalia. Look at Scalia. There's one of the Reagan icons. One of the Reagan icons. Dead. One of the Reagan icons. So the Republican establishment is losing their minds. Absolutely losing their minds. Everything that they thought is not. Everything that they thought is not. So they stack the audience. There's your first. There's your first play. They stack the audience. Now, this is a fact. And when Trump got booed at one point in his going back and forth with Jeb, he even mentioned, he said, "You hear that booing? That's all Jeb Bush lobbyists, donors, and special interests." And then they booed even louder. Boo! So now you're at home going, "Oh, man. Yeah, I guess nobody liked Trump. Yeah, I guess nobody likes him." And again, this isn't a Trump conspiracy theory. These are facts. These are facts. It's reported in Breitbart. It's reported in CNN. It's all over. You basically had 1,600 tickets. And I said this about Iowa. Okay? If you remember, I said this about Iowa when all the Republican candidates were saying, "Well, Donald Trump just doesn't want to face the voters in Iowa, and it's a shame because these are the people that are voting, and he should want to debate on the state." And I said, but the people in the audience aren't the voters of Iowa. They're all donors. They're all special interests. When he does a rally, when he does a town hall, that's talking to the voters. He's not talking to the voters on that debate stage. They're all people that gave money to the RNC, whether it's in Iowa, gave money to Bush, gave money to Rubio, gave money to Kasich, gave money to Ben, whoever. If you got a super PAC, if you got things that are operating in these states, you're getting tickets. So, in South Carolina, you had 1,600 tickets, okay? You had 1,600 tickets, and out of the 1,600, 600 were given to the candidates. So basically, each candidate got 100 tickets. Each candidate got 100 tickets. Imagine, you're running for president, you're Donald Trump, you're Ted Cruz, you're Marco Rubio. Your staff alone is probably 100. I mean, if you think about it, your staff alone, rather it's the staff and the staff's girlfriend or the staff's wife or whoever. And of course, I might be exaggerating by 20 or 30 or 40. Okay, I might be exaggerating by 30, I don't know, 35% as far as staff goes. Maybe it's not 100, but maybe I'm not. An operation like Cruz, you know, Trump's operation is a lot smaller. What the hell, just in Trump's family, there's, what, 10 people? Just in Trump's family, there's 10 people. But regardless, each of those candidates got 100 tickets. That means 1,000 tickets. Okay, 1,000 tickets were now doled out to special interest. Packs. They were doled out to people that give money. They weren't given to spectators on the street. But Lindsey Graham was there. I mean, these weren't voters. It's a special interest. And it made sure that the people in the audience, made sure the people in the audience were supporters of Jeb Bush. So there's your first takeaway. There's your first setup. Okay? There's your first setup for this grudge death blood match. You had an audience, like usual in these debates. And the funny thing is, like I've said, real early in this conversation about the tickets, it wasn't just Trump saying it. You actually had liberal outlets like Huffington Post. You've had all of these liberal outlets reporting about the ticket allocation. It's insane. It really is insane. Not just conservative media, or I should say, not just Breitbart. So you then open this debate with Supreme Court questions. And we covered that a little in the first segment with Scalia. We covered that a little. And you're thinking to yourself, okay, everything seems a little, I don't want to say subdued, but we've been told that Rubio's going to go after Cruz, and Cruz is going to go after Trump, and Rubio and Kasich are going to go after Bush, and then Bush, Rubio, Cruz are going to go after Kasich. I mean, we were told all this, but nothing was happening. They were answering questions. Wasn't too crazy. It really wasn't. Wasn't too crazy. Wasn't too crazy. And then all of a sudden, death bell sounded. Seriously, it was like the death bell sounded. And the attack was on. They started going at Trump. I mean, Jeb Bush started going at Trump. Marco Rubio. I mean, it literally, it was like a pack of wild dogs. Pack of wild dogs that just started unloading on Trump. You had Cruz talk about Trump being pro-abortion, supporting partial birth abortion, not being fit to be commander-in-chief. I mean, it was just unloading. You couldn't get more unloading. It was insane. And now here's where the true insanity ensued, because And I've said this before, and I'm going to say it again. And I want you to remember this. We'll see if anybody uses my theory. We're going to see if any of the big boys, okay? We're going to see if any of the big boys will use my theory. And that is, Donald Trump is not, I repeat, Donald Trump is not running a primary race. He is running a general. I repeat, Donald Trump is not running a primary race. Okay? He's not. He's running a general. That's what he's doing. He's running a general right now. And we'll see Saturday if Republicans, the Republican electorate, appreciate that honesty. Because remember, I want you to remember something. The conservative MO is this. I'm going to block Obama. I'm going to destroy Obama. I'm going to ban abortion. I'm going to ban gay marriage. I am going to be, as Mitt Romney would say, severely conservative. And that's what they do in the primaries. Severely conservative, severely conservative, severely conservative. And all the people vote, and they go, yeah, he's severely conservative. Yeah, all right. Yes, he's severely. Oh. And the person wins the nomination. He gets in the general, and you see that person starting to drift to the center. And all of a sudden, a severely conservative candidate becomes moderate. You don't need the vote now. That person doesn't need that voter in South Carolina. That person, that Mitt Romney doesn't need that voter because that voter's stuck. That voter sat there and went, okay, I got Mitt Romney, Mike Huckabee, Alan Keyes, whoever is still in the race whenever someone votes. And they go, well, Mitt Romney said he's severely conservative. Now, they give them the vote. They get the nomination. And then Mitt Romney goes to the center. And now that person goes, what am I going to do? Can't take my vote back. I can't get my vote back. Then Obama, so got fleeced again. That's what's been happening. And the Republicans are so out of touch with the voters. The establishment's so out of touch with the voters. They think there's nothing wrong with that. The voters are like, yeah, that's cool. No problem. And here comes Trump. And Trump is not sitting there saying, I'm going to tack back to the, or I should say, he's not doing the severely conservative route, get the nomination, and then tack back to the center. That's not what he's doing. He's saying to all the voters, he's saying to the Republican electorate, listen, I'm not going to tack back. I don't have to tack back. I'm going to tell you my feelings on all of these issues. Some of them go against the Republican establishment. But hey, I am me. I am different. And that's why I will bring greatness. And Ted Cruz and Marco Rubio and Jeb Bush will give you the exact same that you've been getting. And so what happened when Ted Cruz said, you're for partial birth abortion, you're for Planned Parenthood, Donald Trump said, listen, I'm not for partial birth abortion. I've stated my position on that. I'm not for abortion, but yes, Planned Parenthood does some good for women's health issues. And there was a collective gasp. I mean, literally, there was a collective gasp. Not by voters, but by the establishment. It was a gasp. And then it was a, aha, we got ya. We got you, you son of a bitch. And instantly, the bill crystals. The George Wills, the Krautheimers, the Larry Elders said, he's not a conservative. We told you he's not a conservative. He's not a conservative. Vote for Cruz. He's not a conservative. He's not a conservative. He said that Planned Parenthood does some good for women with women's health. Oh, my God. He's running a general election. And he's being honest. He's not telling the voter in South Carolina. He's not telling the voter in Iowa. He's not telling them, what do you want me to tell you? Okay? You want me to? Okay? Okay? All right. Give me your vote. Now, listen, when I get in the general, I'm going to do a 360 on everything that I just told you. But you'll take it because you already gave me your vote and you can't take it back. So, F you. Okay. There you go. It's not what he's doing. He sat there at South Carolina and said, hey, Planned Parenthood is horrible as far as performing abortions, using money for abortions that the federal government gives them is horrible. We have amendments. We have rules that state they're not supposed to do that. But there is an aspect of what they do for women and men as far as not performing abortions that are good services. And instead of saying we're going to defund the entire ball of wax, and instead of defunding Planned Parenthood, we should implement more restrictions, more rules, and have a better oversight as far as a committee that makes sure no tax dollars are going to performing abortions. Now, ladies and gentlemen, this position is a general position. This isn't a position of a primary. And this started the head explosions. This started the head explosions. It was pure insanity. But that wasn't the coup de grace. Okay? That wasn't the coup de grace. The coup de grace, if that's how I could properly say it, was when George Bush, or I should say Jeb Bush, should say George, considering that Jeb Bush just invokes his brother and his dad and his mom, for that matter, and everything that he does. It used to be he's running as his own man. I make my own decisions. And now he's on the verge of losing, not just in South Carolina, but actually losing his bid to become the nominee. It's like, well, let me just pull out all the stops. Hey, if you Republican voters liked my brother, you know, 9 years ago, then you should like me. If you like my dad, then you'll like me. So please vote for me and just pretend that I'm my dad or my brother. Thank you. Thank you. Just insane. So Bush throws out the commander-in-chief and the fact that George Bush kept the country safe. Kept the country safe. Okay? The country safe. And this invoked the conversation to go to 9/11. And Donald Trump did the ultimate taboo in Republican politics. Did the ultimate taboo in Republican politics. And he basically said the Iraq war was a mistake. 9/11 happened on George Bush's watch. He did not keep us safe. He lied to get us into war. He lied. People died. Now, you want to talk about gasps? You want to talk about screams? Oh, dear. Oh, dear. Oh, dear. Literally, oh, dear. Insanity ensued. The crowd is booing. The crowd is screaming. Trump doubles down. He goes, George Bush had information. He ignored the CIA. There was no weapons of mass destruction. He was told that Bin Laden was trying to strike America. He ignored it. He didn't keep us safe. I mean, the crowd is losing their mind. The crowd is literally losing their mind. I don't even know how to explain it. They are screaming. They literally are screaming. Screaming at Donald Trump. Screaming. And now remember, the consensus. This is what we're being told. And again, we're not going to know until Saturday. But the whole concept of South Carolina and Bush is that Bush is hugely popular in South Carolina. Okay? And that the military plays a huge part in voting. And they still love George Bush. And any talk of George Bush being a liar, being bad, causing 9/11, all of those things is going to doom Trump. So when this exchange is going on with Trump telling Jeb and telling the audience that the country was not safe, under George Bush's watch because 9/11 happened. And that he had many friends that died in the World Trade Center. Marco Rubio chimes in as he's pandering. He's a little pander monkey. As panders to the South Carolina crowd, because now he's sitting there imagining, because the Republican establishment has told him this is Bush country. So he's sitting there in his mind going, all right, Trump is done. George is first, and I'm going to be second. So he says, I would like to say for one that me and my family would like to thank George Bush for keeping us safe and being president, because God forbid if Al Gore was president during 9/11. And then the crowd, the crowd starts screaming and whooping it up. Those of you who listen to us live, you could watch us on video, extremepolitics.com, and the video or the blog will be up in a few minutes when we're done with this segment of the show. So the crowd starts cheering, wow, wow, wow. And then Rubio doubles down and says, it was really Bill Clinton's fault. It was really Bill Clinton's fault, because he could have took bin Laden out, but he messed up and didn't take bin Laden out. So it's Bill Clinton's fault. And it's kind of funny, because that really just buries George Bush even more. Because if what Rubio's saying, and Bill Clinton has even talked about it before, If what Rubio is saying is truth, and Bill Clinton has backed up that truth, that bin Laden was that bad back in the Bill Clinton presidency, and they were trying to take bin Laden out because he was that bad, and they had an opportunity to take him out, and Bill Clinton didn't take him out, and that was a huge mistake. Then when the CIA and other intelligence agencies gave Jeb Bush, or I should say George Bush, the memos, and Condoleezza Rice the memos, and they gave them the information that said, hey, listen, bin Laden, you know, the guy that the Clinton administration tried to take out, he's still out there. We didn't take him out. He's prepared to strike. He's prepared to hijack airplanes. We messed up. Don't you guys mess up. So in that theory, it makes 9/11 look even worse, considering people tried to get bin Laden back in the Clinton era. It wasn't something that just popped on the radar. And the Bush administration, as I heard one person put it, you don't go after the security guard if a bank gets robbed. You don't blame the security guard. And I kind of laughed and I said, well, yeah, you would if that security guard was told for weeks and weeks and weeks and weeks that bank was going to get robbed. So if the security guard of whatever bank is being told for weeks and weeks and weeks and weeks, hey, someone's going to rob that bank. Someone's going to rob that bank. And the security guard goes, yeah, whatever. Yeah, whatever. Yeah, whatever. And the bank gets robbed? Yeah, it's the security guard's fault. Yeah. So George Bush was being told. George Bush was being told, hey, that guy bin Laden that Clinton didn't get, he's going to attack. He's going to attack. He's going to attack. He's going to attack. And you ignore, 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 ignore. And then you get attacked. Guess what? Guess what? It's your fault. So when Rubio doubled down, kind of doubled down in a sense, that made Jeb and George look really stupid. But hey, he's got a pander. And I'll jump to the end. Just like in Rubio's closing statement, he invoked Israel. Now, I got a lot of Jewish friends. I love my Jewish friends. Okay? Love them. Break bread. We do the dreidel thing. It's great. But Israel never came up in the debate. Nobody talked about Israel. There was never a, what would you do about Israel? Would you Palestine? What are you feeling? No. And after 2 hours in closing arguments, Rubio talks about Israel, which is a pander to Sheldon Adelson and his Las Vegas newspaper that he just purchased, who endorsed Rubio just a week or so ago. And Sheldon Adelson is getting ready to give Marco Rubio the millions of dollars. So that was kind of like a, hey, I got to get this in because Sheldon said if I don't get it in, he's not going to give me money. This is for the Vegas endorsement, and I got to keep this pander monkey going so I could get the cash. It was silly. It was silly. So there's Rubio pandering to Sheldon Adelson and pandering to South Carolina, showing that he is a Bushman through and through. He's a Bushman through and through. So this entire exchange, literally set up a firestorm in the Republican establishment world. I mean, beyond a firestorm, that entire exchange. And it was funny because at one point Jeb is like, I'm sick of him disparaging my family. Just my brother, my father, he was even disparaging my mom. My mom is a strong woman. And Trump goes, well, maybe she should be running. Maybe she should be running. And the thing is, Trump never said anything bad about Barbara Bush. He never did. He basically said, oh, look, Jeb needs to have his mommy come out for him. That's not disparaging Barbara Bush. And again, I love when people go, Donald Trump trying to bully. Donald Trump bullying. You know how silly it sounds to use the word bully with 60 and 70-year-old men? And I've had this discussion before about bullying and people's use of the word bully. Bully is what you use to describe a seventh grader picking on a fifth grader. Okay? You don't use that term when you're referencing a 69-year-old man having an argument with a 60-year-old man, and the 69-year-old man has got the upper hand and is more forceful. To say bully, it's so silly. It's a liberal term. It's a liberal term that is disgusting and just silly in all practical use. And Republicans actually use the word. Donald Trump just bullies people. It's like, really, you guys are using the liberal created word, the word that was created in Different Strokes with the Gooch? So this exchange just erupted into serious controversy. I mean, this is the thing that every single Republican establishment leader has now said is going to do Donald Trump in. Every single establishment leader, the Crystals, the Krautheimers, Fox News, I mean, every single Republican establishment, every single one of them have all said Donald Trump is done. He's sounding like a conspiracy theorist. That's what they're saying. He's sounding like Michael Moore, which is kind of silly considering A, Michael Moore was given a whole platform to hobnob with Megyn Kelly and Fox. So that's kind of funny. And two, Trump never talked about Saudi connections. There's so many things that are Michael Moore. What Trump said was, there's no weapons of mass destruction. Fact. George Bush, Dick Cheney lied about the war. That's fact. Dick Cheney said there's weapons of mass destruction. Now, you could sit there and listen to the Larry Elders and other Republican establishments that say there was weapons of mass destruction. They just moved them. There was weapons of mass. They just moved them. Okay. There was no weapons of mass destruction. However you want to play the game, there is no weapons of mass destruction. So that was true. When Donald Trump said, you guys told all of us there's weapons of mass destruction, there wasn't. That's a lie. 9/11 happened on George Bush's watch. That is true. That's not being safe. George Bush knew about the bin Laden imminent attacks beforehand. That is true. We've talked about that on this show. That if you get memos and you have CIA directors, you have people telling you, hey, Bill Clinton tried to kill this guy and he failed. This guy's a bad guy. Let's not make the same mistake as Bill Clinton. He messed up because he was getting fellatio. Who knows? But we don't want to be a loser like him. Yeah, you're right. Okay. So we are being told that bin Laden wants to hijack passenger airplanes. So what we need to do is call the heads of all the passenger airline companies, tell them what's going on. We got to beef security. We will not let anybody hijack these planes. Are we ready? All right. Oh. Again, nothing that Trump said was wrong, but in the Republican bubble, in this bubble that Donald Trump, as of right now, is popping. And we'll know Saturday. We'll know. Saturday, he goes from being 22 up to losing by 10. Then we know the Republican establishment and the Republican electorate have said, hey, we blindly go and support what George Bush said about Iraq and 9/11. You crossed the line. All the other things you've said before, hell, calling our Senator Lindsey Graham every name in the book, that wasn't crossing the line because we agree. He's a little weird. He's a 60-something-year-old man that lives with his sister, has never been married. Yes, it's a little weird. Doesn't even have a girlfriend. Nothing. That's not crossing the line, but when you talk about George Bush, that's crossing the line, and we reject you. And we just took you down in South Carolina. Now we're going to take you down. Now we're going to take you down in Florida. We're going to take you down in all these states. We're throwing you out. Now, if that's the case, then guess what? New Republicans, conservative Republicans are all the same. Millennial Republicans, they're all the same. They all believe certain talking points, and no matter what anybody says, no matter if somebody puts truth in front of their face, they will ignore it. And they will go with what Bill Kristol and Roger Ailes and Rupert Murdoch put out there. But the fact of the matter is Trump wasn't touting Michael Moore positions. It's not a Michael Moore position. Those are just facts. Now, if he was going through the whole Saudi connection and talking about my pet goat, well, okay. Sure. Then I would have to agree with some of your points. When Jeb Bush invokes George Bush, as far as I kept this country safe or my brother kept this country safe, that's BS. He didn't. He should have took Bin Laden out. Plain and simple. And if not take him out, at least kept us safe from Bin Laden taking us out. And when Bill Clinton failed, which Bill Clinton failed, and Bush knew, Condi knew, Powell knew, Cheney knew, they all knew. Clinton was more worried about his own sexual pleasure than taking out the most dangerous terrorist in the world. When that happened, we should have been on heightened alert. Plain and simple. Plain and simple. Plain and simple. That's a fact. So now you have everybody losing their minds. They are losing their minds on Trump and saying this is it for him. He talked about Planned Parenthood doing some good. And he said George Bush was responsible for 9/11, and he did not keep us safe. Losing their minds. And then the other fireworks erupted between Cruz and Trump, because when Cruz stated the abortion lines, when he stated that Trump would nominate liberal judges, Trump unloaded on Cruz, called him a liar, called him a nasty person. Said Ted Cruz lies about everything. Ted Cruz lied about Ben Carson. And those lies cost Ben Carson an election. He lies. It got heated. And the word lie is a big deal. When you're telling people that someone is a liar, it's a big deal. Because that pivoted to Rubio and Cruz getting into a spat over lying. Because the immigration issue came up. And, you know, it's funny because it's obvious that CBS, that are running the Republican debate for CBS, not only want Jeb to do good, but they are really pushing for Rubio. They're really pushing for Rubio. Because the funny thing about when Rubio was speaking about immigration, this graphic came up, and it was bizarre. And they didn't have a lot of graphics. Matter of fact, I think they might have just had two. Might have just had two. It was almost as if, and I don't buy this because executives and networks, people that are this big company, this isn't like a high school football game where they just learned how to do graphics and it took them days. And when they started to implement the graphics, they ran out of time. It was like, hey, man, we tried. The next one we'll do a better job. And now that we know what we're doing. No, that's not the case. But when Marco Rubio started talking about immigration and his stance, and remember, he's part of the Gang of Eight. He's part of Amnesty. Which is funny. You guys got to understand this. And I'm not bouncing around, because we're on the Rubio Cruz thing. I'm trying to wind this down. The Republican voting electorate, by and large, is not for amnesty. They're not for giving green cards to illegals. They're not for rewarding illegals. They're just not. The general Republican voting electorate is not for that. And especially in South Carolina, especially in New Hampshire. I mean, these are states where illegal immigration is a no-no, okay? It's not like Los Angeles, where illegal immigration is a plus. But yet, when Marco Rubio and Jeb Bush and Kasich talked about illegal immigration and basically issuing amnesty and, you know, letting millions and millions and millions of illegals stay, people cheered. People celebrated. You would think that's debate. You would think they were having it in Los Angeles. Bizarre. Absolutely bizarre. You would think they were having this debate in Los Angeles because the crowd was cheering. That just shows you another example of the donor class being in that audience. Not voters. If voters were in that audience, they would have been cheering Ted Cruz and Donald Trump, not Marco Rubio and Jeb Bush. When the question came to Jeb, and Jeb again started talking about the whole act of love, and the moderator brought up his statements of the act of love, the crowd cheered. When Donald Trump went after him about that, the crowd booed. The crowd's booing being tough on illegal immigration. It's insane. So when Rubio has his chance to respond about the Gang of Eight, as he's talking about this bill, a graphic comes up that says Marco Rubio, Senator Marco Rubio, deport criminal undocumented immigrants. Finish 700 miles of southern border wall and eliminate funding for sanctuary cities. All of those things are not things that Rubio is a staunch supporter of. Every single one of those things, Rubio says, should be done after the American people can see that the federal government is doing a better job at securing the border. So he doesn't believe in deporting illegals. He doesn't believe in eliminating DACA. He doesn't believe in any of that stuff. But here's CBS putting up a graphic. So if you're sitting there watching TV, once again, listening to the crowd cheer and boo and get your sense of where the electorate is in South Carolina to influence your vote, which it shouldn't, but, you know, some people are mindless. They're seeing a graphic and they're going, wow, this guy's tough on illegal immigration. No, he's not. He worked on a bill to give millions and millions and millions of illegals green cards. So this is going on. The graphic is up. And now him and Ted Cruz are going back and forth over the Gang of Eight amnesty bill. And it's funny when you listen to Roush Limbu talk about Marco Rubio being a good guy, being good for the Republican Party, being a conservative. It's extremely funny considering that he is pro-amnesty. He's somebody that works and worked with Chuck Schumer and other Democrats to pass an amnesty bill. And yet, you have people like Rush Limbaugh saying, oh, well, he's still conservative. It's amazing. So him and Cruz start going back and forth at each other. And Cruz, and this is a funny moment, Cruz says to him, Marco, you went on Univision. You talked to Jorge Ramos, and you told him that you wouldn't repeal DACA. You told him in Spanish. And Rubio says to Ted Cruz, Ted, how do you know what I said in Spanish? You don't even speak Spanish. And then Ted Cruz busted out Spanish. How's that just the most bizarre Republican debate? You've got a platform of deporting illegals. Got a platform of deporting illegals. And here's two candidates arguing over who speaks Spanish. Is that just effing mind-blowing? Is that just effing mind-blowing? I'm going to deport 11 million. I'm going to build a wall. You don't know how to speak Spanish. I know how to speak Spanish. You're not a real Spanish. You're not a real Spaniard. You're not a real Spaniard. Bizarre. Absolutely bizarre. In the middle, like I said, running a general, not a primary. And Marco Rubio starts saying Ted Cruz is a liar. Ted Cruz lied about his own amnesty flip-flop. Ted Cruz was for issuing hundreds of thousands, and he is a liar. So now you got Trump on one side calling Ted Cruz a liar. You've got Marco Rubio calling Ted Cruz a liar. And people already feel Ted Cruz is a shifty, slimy, skeevy snake oil salesman. And he's just in the middle with this smirk on his face, this creepy smirk. It's not good. Because something about liar, just something inherently about liar is bad. And when somebody's saying you're a liar, someone else says you're a liar, but already look at you as being sleazy, and you're trying to tell the world that you are anti-establishment, but yet you've been in the Senate for X amount of years. Your wife works for Goldman Sachs for X amount of years. You were a law clerk for the Supreme Court for X amount of years. You worked for the Bush administration for X amount of years. You went to Princeton. You went to Harvard. That's not very anti-establishment. That's very establishment. And now you got people saying you're a liar. You cheated. You cast. You cost Ben Carson votes. You cheated. You're a liar. Hampstead, you're a skeeve. You're a skeevoza. You're a skeever. You're a skeeve. Those are the big moments. And then, of course, Ben Carson should just leave. And I'm not saying that meanly. He should just leave. And John Kasich, guys, you want to talk about a wishy-washy candidate? I told you. If it came down to if Trump died and fell under a gas truck, it would be Christie and then Kasich. But I got to tell you, that Kasich, man, he is so wishy-washy. And what I mean by wishy-washy, I'm not saying necessarily, oh, back and forth. It's more like, hey, let's not be negative. Let's have rainbows. Let's have unicorns. After having a wishy-washy Obama,
well, I got a red line, and damn it, if you cross that red line, bad things are going to happen. Okay, I'm going to move the line. If you cross that red line, bad. Okay, listen, forget the red lines. I mean, we've already had that president.
We need a president that says, listen, I will mess the world up, okay? I will mess your world up. I will mess it. And they just look and go, all right, I get it. So this Kasich is too wishy. And I'm not just talking about world leaders. Yeah, you know, dealing with the Senate where you have everybody in a room and the senators know that they could just bully the president. They could just bully him. They could use the liberal term bully. They could just bully him. You want a president that's like, listen, guys, you're not going to sit in this room with me and beat me up for 20 minutes. Here's my red line. I'll let you guys go to this red line. But you're not going to cross it, because if you cross it, I will throw you out of the Oval Office so quick and so fast. And those senators believe him. I think everybody believed Ronald Reagan would throw you out of his office. I think they believed Richard Nixon would throw you out of his office. There's presidents. Is squirmy as and shifty as he was, I think Bill Clinton had a side of him that would throw you out of his office to get, you know, some tail, but nonetheless, he would have done it. I gotta get this tail. Get out of here. You ain't gonna give me what you want. Get out of here. I need this. I need this now. I need this poon time. I need it now. So that was the takeaway. Okay? That was the takeaway. Donald Trump is running a general election. End of story. I've had this debate on this show about what is a conservative, what is a populist, what is a nationalist, what is an evangelical, where is the Republican Party today? The Republican Party today is not the party of the 80s. And the Republican establishment is completely out of touch of where the voters are. Not every single millennial is Democrat. Not every single millennial is a liberal. So you have young voters that are Republicans, and this whole evangelical Reagan-esque vibe is not necessarily what they're about. They don't necessarily toe the line that the Republican Party says you have to toe. You have to be pro this, 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 and this. And if you are against any of these things, you're not a real Republican. You're not a real conservative. The Republican of today does not believe that ideology. He does not. She does not. And have an ideology that says, listen, I don't like abortion. It's disgusting. It's horrible. But, if someone else wants to have an abortion, it's their choice. And as long as the abortion is not done past the 8th week, I can live with that. There are Republicans, and a lot of them, that feel that way. The notion that unless you are, that position stays, if by miracle he ever got the nomination, which is all abortion is illegal unless the woman's life is in danger. But incest and rape, you cannot have an abortion. That is not a position that is a common theme amongst the 62 million Republican voters of 2012 and 2008. And for the Republican Party to think that that is how every voter is just shows they are out of touch. If they believe that every single Republican voter believes that there were weapons of mass destruction, they are out of touch. But we'll know. We're going to know. We're going to know, because this debate is just going to keep getting hotter and hotter and hotter. And it's all going to come to a boiling point Saturday. The Republican establishment is right. Maybe they are right. Maybe every single Republican voter toes the line. And rather they're a 22-year-old or a 40-year-old or a 60-year-old, they all toe the line regardless. Or maybe not. Maybe they appreciate Donald Trump. Maybe they appreciate the honesty. Maybe they appreciate somebody who doesn't pander and say something that most people know is not the truth, but will say it because the establishment of his party says he has to. Those are my takeaways. Just remember, Donald Trump is not running a primary. He's running a general. And the things that he talked about and things that he did appeal to a lot more voters than just Republicans. Don't forget.